Headlines: the U.S. is becoming more isolated over its unequivocal support for Israel, as its allies vote on a U.N. General Assembly resolution calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement says Israeli captives can be released only after the establishment of a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And companies supporting Israel are coming under more pressure to cut aid to the regime over its atrocities against the people of Palestine. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly voted in favor of a resolution that calls for an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza.
The result of the vote is as follows: 153 in favor, 10 against, 23 abstentions. Draft resolution A/ES10/L27 has been adopted.
The U.S. rejected the non-binding resolution, while the U.K. abstained. The Palestinian presidency, meanwhile, welcomed the resolution, urging the countries with the yes vote to oblige Israel to implement it. The Palestinian UN envoy, Riyad Mansour, also hailed the passage of the resolution as historic. The resistance movement Hamas also called on the international community to pressure Israel to abide by the resolution. It said that Israel should stop its aggression, genocide, and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. Australia backed the latest UN General Assembly resolution on Gaza in a rare split with its close allies, the US and the UK.
Australia, alongside 152 other countries, was among the countries which voted in favour. In doing so, we joined Canada, New Zealand, Japan, France and India, and many other countries. Australia appreciates the bringing forward of this resolution by the Arab group, and we not acknowledge the gravity of the Secretary-General invoking Article 99. And in doing so, we have said Israel must respect international humanitarian law. Civilians and civilian infrastructure, including hospitals, must be protected. The resolution we have supported is consistent with the position we have previously outlined on these issues.
Wong said UN members see pauses in fighting as a critical step on the path to a sustainable and permanent ceasefire. On Friday, the U.S. vetoed a ceasefire resolution proposed in the UN Security Council that called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. was the only country to reject the ceasefire call. It came after the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, invoked the rarely used Article 99 of the UN Charter to raise attention on Gaza. There has been increasing international pressure on Israel and its key backer, the U.S., to end the genocide in Gaza. The spokesman for the Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says the release of Israeli prisoners is possible only through indirect negotiations and after the establishment of a permanent ceasefire. Abu Hamza said if Israel does not accept the resistance conditions, its prisoners will be killed under the regime's continuing bombardment of Gaza. He said that if all the forces on earth come together, they won't be able to free a single prisoner. Abu Hamza said by prolonging the war in Gaza, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, seeks to remain in power and evade the tragic fate of his tenure. He also said no matter how long the war in Gaza lasts, the resistance will not surrender. Abu Hamza said the resistance is determined to achieve victory in the current war. The Israeli military has confirmed the loss of 10 more of its personnel during the ground operation in the Gaza Strip. An Israeli military spokesman says the soldiers were killed in clashes with Palestinian resistance fighters. Since the onset of Israel's ground invasion of Gaza on October the 27th, the regime has lost 115 troopers. Palestinian resistance groups believe the figure is higher as Israel hides the real number of its military casualties. Meanwhile, Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, has fired a barrage of missiles at Israel's Reim military base. That is the latest in attacks by the resistance groups against Israeli positions in response to the genocide in Gaza. Day 68 of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, where indiscriminate airstrikes have taken a heavy toll on people and civilian structures, especially hospitals. Israeli forces have laid a heavy siege on Al-Auda and Kamal Adwan hospitals in northern Gaza, with a number of Palestinians killed and injured. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, Israeli forces have abducted all men at the Kamal Adwan Hospital, including member staff, patients, and those taking shelter. The ministry says that they have been taken to an unknown location. Meanwhile, 13 Palestinians have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes across Gaza. Over 18,400 people, mostly women and children, have lost their lives since the war began. Let's take a listen now to comments by some of the Gaza residents about the appalling conditions that they are facing.
Life became so difficult. We don't have food. We don't have water. For 3 days in a row, I haven't been able to feed my children. The prices are so high. We're six, and my husband all the time looking for food, but he couldn't find anything. My children are crying all the time, and I have one of my kids sick. He has intestinal disease, as my children still wear light clothes. We're homeless.
I attempted to bring an oxygen tank my disabled child needs to stay alive. But unfortunately, the Israeli soldiers ordered me to drop it near the checkpoint as we were moving to the south. I tried to tell them that my child is sick and disabled, and I stripped him to prove that he's sick. However, they shot at me. He needs a special food, which basically consists of the fruits, yet every time he needs food, I bring him a solution.
German sportswear giant Puma has decided to end the sponsorship contract that it has with Israel's football team next year amid the growing boycott call for the regime over its genocide in Gaza. The company said the decision is based solely on business reasons, but leaked internal messages reveal that Puma was under tremendous pressure to drop the contract that was made in 2022. A pro-Palestinian group known as Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS movement has hailed the announcement. It also thanked Palestine solidarity groups that called for the boycott of Israeli-linked firms. Puma has been the target of the international BDS movement since 2018 over the company's support for Israel. Its stores have been targeted by protesters in recent weeks over its brand's contract with the Israeli Football Association. Activists have accused Puma of supporting Israeli settlements on the occupied Palestinian territories. They say that the company is complicit in Israel's apartheid and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. Meanwhile, Americans have held new rallies in New York City to express solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn pro-Israel stances of some media outlets and firms, including the New York Times, Citigroup, and Starbucks. The protesters called for a halt to the Israeli genocide in Gaza and a permanent ceasefire there. They also deplored Citibank for investing in Israel's infrastructure and facilitating billions of dollars in military funding for the regime. They demanded that Citibank acknowledge the ongoing genocide in Gaza and push for a lasting ceasefire. Calls also grew to boycott Starbucks, which has distanced itself from its workers' union support for Palestinians. Protesters also gathered outside of the headquarters of the New York Times to condemn its stance on Palestine. The support for Gaza has grown further since the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution on a Gaza ceasefire last week. Also in the U.K., hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters gathered in Westminster, calling on the government to push for a ceasefire in Gaza amid a worsening humanitarian crisis there. Protesters accused the British government of supporting Israeli genocide in the besieged territory.
And point out that the United Kingdom is an accomplice and a supporter of the Israeli occupation. The mechanical parts of F-16s and UAVs that bombard and kill our people are manufactured in the United Kingdom. Those who listen to our cries and watch our pains without flinching a muscle or raising a finger should be ashamed of themselves.
18,000 people are dead in Gaza. 18,000 people. 8,000 of those are children. If that doesn't make anyone think this is wrong, then that person is soulless and heartless, i.e. those people in there eating, drinking, having a laugh with the genocide-endorsing Labour Party.
There is no let-up in Israeli raids across the occupied West Bank. Regime forces have attacked the Palestinian city of Jenin for the second consecutive day. Israeli forces pressed ahead with their mass detention campaign in Jenin, including in the city's refugee camp. Israeli troops also maintained their siege of Jenin's public hospital for the second day in a row, blocking ambulances' access there. On Tuesday, regime forces, backed by armored vehicles and bulldozers, attacked Jenin and killed at least 7 people. Israeli soldiers also obstructed medics that rushed to the scene to treat the injured.
This morning, we were informed of a rocket attack, so we immediately responded. On our way to the location of the attack, the Israeli military stopped us and checked our IDs and the ambulances. This kept us from attending to the injured on time and aggravated their condition. And eventually, 4 injured people died. On our way back while transporting the martyrs, the Israeli military prevented us from entering the hospitals before checking our IDs and the ambulances. This is common practice whenever the Israeli military enters the city of Jenin and its refugee camp.
The Israeli military carries out raids on Palestinian cities and refugee camps frequently. Regime forces attack and detain people and block ambulances' access to hospitals. Tel Aviv has also stepped up its attacks across occupied territories since October 7, when the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza. Since then, Israeli forces and settlers have killed more than 280 Palestinians and detained hundreds more in the occupied West Bank. Mona Kandil is a correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah to tell us more. Okay, Mona, we have some major developments, obviously, that has happened that I'm looking at, and it also includes one particular demolition of a house that I guess was home to 30 Palestinians, if that's accurate.
Israeli forces have destroyed 3 houses in Jenin. They bombed those houses in the refugee camp. One of the homes is the home of Palestinian leader, one of the leaders of the Jenin Brigade, Sa'udayeb Ajawi, when the Israeli forces fired the missiles at the eastern neighborhood in the refugee camp and bombed this house. The Israeli military continued their operation for over 30 hours in the noon hours, let's say. The clashes between Palestinians and Israeli forces had renewed. The Palestinian Prisoners Society revealed that the Israeli soldiers arrested at least 100 Palestinians from Jenin City and its refugee camp, and they believe that only 30 of them had been released by the Israelis after interrogation. During this operation, the 3 hospitals in Jenin, Al-Amal, Al-Razi, and Jenin Government Hospital, had been surrounded by the Israeli forces. Israeli soldiers were stationing outside these hospitals at the entrances, preventing ambulances from reaching the hospitals or entering the hospitals. And the soldiers had blocked the ambulances, and they insisted the soldiers to check the IDs of the ambulance drivers, of the paramedics, and even those who had been wounded and were being transferred inside the hospital. All the entrances to the Jenin area had been closed. The major road leading to Jenin City and northern the occupied West Bank were closed, and Palestinians have to take other roads, and the Israelis were only allowing Palestinians living in Jenin, Nablus, Tulkarem, and Khalqiya to only enter these areas with the strict measures. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have raided the town of Hizma in Al-Quds for several hours. Israeli troops had attacked the people, stormed Palestinians' homes, and arrested at least 15 people from Hizma. Not only this, they didn't only arrest people. The Israeli soldiers were seen confiscating Palestinian vehicles from the Hizma area, and they also caused destruction in the infrastructure in the town of Hizma as well. In Nablus, clashes erupted as well during the operation of the Israeli military. At least 1 Palestinian had been detained. In Qalqilya, a student, a school student, was shot. He was wounded and he was arrested by the Israeli forces. In the refugee camp of Al-Am'ari near Ramallah, 3 Palestinians had been detained. One of them is a brother of a Palestinian martyr. The 2 others were former Palestinian prisoners.
Well, thank you. Moving on, the Palestinian foreign minister has condemned Israel for its deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
As we speak, at least 1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, half of them children, are starving. Not because of a natural disaster or because of lack of generous assistance waiting at the border. No, they are starving because of Israel's deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against the people it occupied.
Maliki was speaking at a UN meeting in Geneva. He deplored the international community for inaction toward the situation in Gaza. The Palestinian diplomat warned of the condition that deprives Palestinians from the most basic right afforded to all human beings. He said that it was a, quote, utter international failure in protecting the Palestinians. Israel has imposed a total blockade of the Gaza Strip, cutting the flow of food, fuel, water, medicine, and electricity into the besieged territories. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says Gaza is now like, quote, hell on earth, as Israel continues the bombardment of the besieged territory. The UNRWA chief made the comment in a post on X after visiting the Gaza Strip. Philippe Lazzarini said what the Palestinian territory is facing amounts to an endless, deepening tragedy. The United Nations human rights chief has also called the situation in Gaza, quote, well beyond breakdown.
It is clear, if you look at the humanitarian situation at the moment, it is so precarious that the Secretary General, well, all of us have been saying what we had to say, including our humanitarian colleagues, because it's I don't even know what word to find in terms of precariousness. I don't know whether you can give me a better word than precarious. It's extremely precarious. I mean, it's on the verge of well beyond breakdown. So, of course, there is a clarion call for everyone and for the international institutions that deal with it to take it very seriously and to act on it.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Hunter Biden was indicted on 9 tax charges in California on Thursday, 7th of December, as a special counsel investigation into the business dealings of President Biden's son intensifies against the backdrop of a looming 2024 election. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CNN cable news network has covered this story and tells us more. Hunter Biden has been charged in connection with a long-running Justice Department investigation into his taxes. The second criminal case that special counsel David Weiss has brought against President Joe Biden's son. The charges span 9 counts, including failure to file and pay taxes, evasion of assessment, and false or fraudulent tax return. CNN was first to report a new criminal case had been filed. According to the special counsel's team, Hunter Biden engaged in a 4-year scheme to not pay at least $1.4 million in taxes that he owed from 2016 through to 2019. Though Hunter Biden did eventually pay his taxes from 2018, prosecutors allege that he included false business deductions in order to evade assessment of taxes to reduce the substantial tax liabilities that he faced. Prosecutors also allege in the 56-page indictment that he subverted the payroll and tax withholding process of his own company by withdrawing millions of dollars outside of its payroll and tax withholding process. The president's son spent millions of dollars on an extravagant lifestyle rather than paying his tax bills, according to the indictment, which states between 2016 and 15th of October 2020, the defendant spent his money on drugs, escorts and girlfriends, luxury hotels and rental properties, exotic cars, clothing and other items of a personal nature, in short, everything but his taxes. The indictment also referenced Hunter Biden's 2021 memoir, Beautiful Things, in which he detailed some of his personal struggles with addiction and substance abuse. He was paid more than $140,000 related to the book from January through to October of 2020, according to the indictment. Hunter Biden's attorney, Abby Lowell, said in a statement that based on the facts and the law, if Hunter's last name was anything other than Biden, the charges in Delaware and now in California would not have been brought against him. First, U.S. Attorney David Weiss bowed to Republican pressure to file unprecedented and unconstitutional gun charges to renege on a non-prosecution resolution. Now, after 5 years of investigating with no new evidence, and 2 years after Hunter Biden paid his taxes in full, the U.S. attorney has piled on 9 new charges when he had agreed just months ago to resolve this matter with a pair of misdemeanors, he continued. Lowell had sent a letter to David Weiss on Tuesday asking to speak with prosecutors before any additional charging decisions are made. He said in his Thursday statement that the customary meeting to discuss this investigation did not occur. Asked for comment, the White House referenced CNN to the Justice Department and Hunter Biden's representatives. In a news release announcing the charges on Thursday, 7th of December, the Justice Department said Hunter Biden could face a maximum of 17 years in prison if convicted of the charges. The case had been close to being resolved in July when a plea deal fell apart. The new tax case stems from Hunter Biden's lucrative overseas business dealings, including his involvement with Ukrainian energy company Burisma and a Chinese private equity fund, which are at the center of House Republicans' impeachment inquiry into his father, Joe Biden. Now the president will be campaigning for a second White House term and fighting a Republican impeachment bid while his son fights to avoid prison in 2 criminal cases. According to court filings from the now-defunct plea deal, Hunter Biden repeatedly missed IRS deadlines to pay his federal taxes on time and eventually owed about $2 million to the government. He paid the money back in 2021 with a loan from a friend. Federal prosecutors have been scrutinizing Hunter Biden's finances since 2018, and Trump-appointed U.S. Attorney David Weiss was designated special counsel in August. The probe appeared to be winding down this summer when Hunter Biden agreed to plead guilty to 2 tax misdemeanors and prosecutors would recommend no jail time. They also agreed that a gun charge would be dropped in 2 years if he stayed out of legal trouble. But both proposed deals collapsed after scrutiny from a federal judge and disagreements over the fine print. Then David Weiss indicted Hunter Biden in September on three charges relating to the purchase of a gun from a shop in Delaware in 2018, at a time prosecutors say he was an illegal drug user. Hunter Biden's attorneys previously accused David Weiss of bending to political pressure from Republicans and said his actions present a grave threat to our system of justice. One of the reasons Republicans have attacked David Weiss is because of testimony from two IRS whistleblowers who were involved in the probe and said they witnessed political interference by the Justice Department. The whistleblowers said career IRS agents recommended felony tax charges against Hunter Biden in early 2022. David Weiss and Attorney General Merrick Garland have refuted the whistleblowers' claims. The website Politico.com has also covered this story and tells us more. A federal grand jury in California has indicted Hunter Biden on nine charges, including three felonies for failing to pay his taxes, understating his income and exaggerating his expenses on tax return forms between 2016 and 2019. With separate criminal charges against him pending in Delaware for illegally possessing a gun, the president's son could face two criminal trials next year as his father runs for re-election against Donald Trump, who himself is facing four criminal cases. The Hunter Biden cases were brought by special counsel David Weiss, the Delaware prosecutor who has long supervised the federal probe into president's son. The new charges include tax evasion, filing false tax returns, failure to file returns on time, and failing to pay federal taxes. They carry a maximum possible prison term of 17 years, although defendants typically get shorter sentences under federal guidelines. Each of the tax charges accuses Hunter Biden of acting willfully, something his defense is sure to contest, since he has acknowledged struggling for years with drug addiction. Prosecutors acknowledge those issues at points in the indictment, but say Biden spent lavishly on an extravagant lifestyle while shirking on his taxes, including paying for drugs, escorts and girlfriends, luxury hotels and rental properties, exotic cars, clothing and other items of a personal nature. After 5 years of investigating with no new evidence and 2 years after Hunter Biden paid his taxes in full, the U.S. attorney has piled on nine new charges when he had agreed just months ago to resolve this matter with a pair of misdemeanors. Hunter Biden's attorney, Abby Lowell, said in a statement. The statement added, "I wrote U.S. Attorney David Weiss days ago seeking a customary meeting to discuss this investigation. The response was media leaks today that these charges were being filed." The charges come amid an effort by House Republicans to link President Joe Biden to his son's business dealings as part of an impeachment inquiry, though the inquiry has produced no evidence so far that Joe Biden took any action as president or vice president to corruptly enrich his family.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide to managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on a few sermons, like we will be shifting our focus from sermon to sermon based on the requirements and needs of our discussion. Mostly sermon number 16, sermon number 83 and others, where the discussion of the requirements of a manager, what makes a good manager and things like that are present. At the moment, we are focusing on a very important topic, and we want to work on this topic called taqwa. Taqwa, basically translated as piety, is one of the very key elements of a good manager, someone who wants to manage the affairs of a community or the affairs of a group, of a society, of any particular institute, however small, requires this very, very essential quality of taqwa. Inshallah, we shall discuss more about it in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners to IRIB English Radio. We were discussing about the topic of a guide to managers, wherein we said one of the key elements for a manager to be successful in his affairs is that he needs the quality of taqwa, or the quality of piety. Now, mostly when we talk about piety, people might have some already, you know, some misconceptions or sometimes some stereotypes in their minds with regards to what it means and what it is. And when it comes to trying to identify who a pious person is, there are certain criteria that people may have in their minds and in their interactions with people. So sometimes people, they judge the piety of a person from their physical appearance. For example, if they wear a certain garb, or if they carry a certain posture, or if they have certain, certain material of worship in their hands, like a rosary or a Quran or things like that, then that would be a reason to say a person is piety, a person has piety or is pious. These are basically you can say could be factors or could be, you can say, results of a pious individual, but are not necessarily the results of piety. Piety is more, you can say, profound than to be judged by these apparent issues. And a person should be able to penetrate from this apparent and try to understand the reality of a person, not through just these apparent things, but through things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has mentioned in the Quran, mainly which is to be adherent to the, you can say, commandments of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and what Allah wants. That is what actually makes the essence of a pious person and not just these apparent issues that I mentioned. Yes, these apparent issues are very important, but they are not a necessary aspect of piety. These are, you can say, are not sufficient. They are important and they need to be there, but they are not you can say they are not sufficient. You need other important aspects to fill up this idea of piety and being pious.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, so what actually is piety? Inshallah, this is something that needs to be unraveled slowly. But I'll try to quickly summarize it with some examples. See, when scholars talk about piety, they interpret it or they translate it or you can say they explain it this way. They say that taqwa is a state which a human being has or achieves, and the signs of this state is that a person is aware about his actions, his interactions, and the direction of his works. He's aware of that, and this awareness is a result of the state that a person has. That means a person is quite you can say alert about the things that he does and the things that he decides and the directions that he takes with regards to his actions. This is the meaning of taqwa. This is generally what they say is taqwa. So, a pious person is one who is aware of his actions, who is alert about the things he does and the way he interacts, and he's also very, very careful about the direction and you can say the intentions, let's say, that are behind the types of actions he's doing. This is something that means he's not oblivious of what is going on within himself and what he's exuding in terms of the actions and the interactions that he performs. This is a very important part of taqwa, and this is actually what we say is taqwa and piety. If a person has this, then you can say that he is a pious individual. Of course, there are levels that we shall discuss about in the coming sessions, inshallah. And of course, we are extremely lucky to have role models that have reached the highest levels of taqwa. And one of those great personalities is a woman, in fact, which shows the vastness and greatness of Islam in the amount of respect and honor it gives to a woman, that a woman can reach the very pinnacles of perfection and taqwa, just like Bibi Fatimatu Zahra alayhi salam achieved that in her lifetime, in a very short lifespan that she had. And as we are experiencing the days of Fatimiyya, we send our condolences to the 12th Holy Imam and to all of the believers and Muslims around the world. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
A major Iraqi anti-terrorist group says its forces will remain prepared with their fingers on the trigger until the complete expulsion of all American occupation forces from Iraq. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. Iraq's anti-terror group Qatar Hezbollah said the United States has turned its embassy compound in Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone into a military command center conspiring against the Iraqi nation. Abu Ali al-Askari, a senior security official with Qatar Hezbollah, made the remarks in a statement on Sunday, 10th of December, emphasizing that the diplomatic mission serves as a major base where military and security operations against the Iraqi people are being planned. The statement comes as approximately 7 mortar rounds landed in the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad's Green Zone during an attack early on Friday, 8th of December. The attack was the latest recorded against U.S. occupation forces in the region in a single day since mid-October, when resistance forces started targeting U.S.-occupied bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria over Washington's unqualified support for Israel in its bloody war on Gaza. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, in a telephone call with Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani, condemned the attack and singled out Qatar over Hezbollah and the Harakat Hezbollah al-Najaba groups for the recent targeting of U.S. servicemen in Iraq. Recently, the leader of Iraq's Harakat Hezbollah al-Najaba warned that the United States will pay dearly for an attack that martyred 5 members of the resistance group in northern Iraq. Sheikh Akram al-Kabi said in a statement on 4th of December that the United States should expect more painful attacks by Iraqi resistance forces on its bases and interests in Iraq following an airstrike that martyred Najaba fighters in Kirkuk a day earlier. Sheikh Akram al-Kabi said attacks by Iraqi resistance groups on U.S. forces will continue until they are completely expelled from Iraq. The attacks by Iraqi resistance forces are part of a larger regional pattern of anti-U.S. and anti-Israeli action that has repeated itself since Israel launched its bloody war of aggression against Gaza on 7th of October. That includes attacks on targets in the occupied Palestinian territories by the Yemeni army and the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Yemen's Ansar Allah movement has also seized a ship believed to be linked to the Israeli regime. The group has warned that it sees all ships linked to Israel that sail off Yemeni ports as legitimate targets. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. A major Iraqi anti-terrorist group says its forces will remain prepared with their fingers on the trigger until the complete expulsion of all American occupation forces from Iraq. The Qatar Hezbollah group made the announcement on Sunday, 10th of December, in a statement. It is part of the Popular Mobilization Units, or the PMU, which is an umbrella group for resistance movements in Iraq. The Popular Mobilization Unit has been recognized by the government in Baghdad as a legitimate force to defend the country against security threats, especially those posed by terrorist groups. Qatar Hezbollah affirmed in a statement that the same resistance fighters who managed to defeat the United States and the Daesh Takfiri terrorists will maintain their war preparedness until all Americans are expelled from Iraq. Back in 2017, the Popular Mobilization Units played a decisive role in helping the Iraqi army defeat Daesh terrorists in Iraq. Qatar Hezbollah said the Daesh terrorist group was created by the United States and its allies. Qatar Hezbollah added, the same Iraqi people who supported the country and humiliated and defeated the United States and its creation, the Daesh terrorists, will keep their fingers on the trigger until the expulsion of all American occupiers from Iraq. The Daesh terrorist group had established a major presence in Iraq and the neighboring Syria in 2014, as Washington was running out of excuses to extend its own military presence across West Asia. The United States and its allies then rolled into the two Arab countries, Iraq and Syria, under the pretext of uprooting terrorists. However, the Daesh terrorists rapidly overran great swathes of territories in both Iraq and Syria, slaying thousands of civilians and members of security forces in both countries. Qatar Hezbollah described the collapse of the Iraqi security forces in the face of terrorists as a conspiracy that was hatched by the United States and its regional allies. That situation continued until Iraq's top Shia cleric, Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ali al-Sistani, issued a fatwa or religious decree urging Iraqis to take up arms against the Daesh terrorist group. Grand Ayatollah Sistani's decree led to the formation of the Popular Mobilization Units, also known by its Arabic name, the Hashad al-Sha'bi. Qatar Hezbollah said the fatwa issued at the height of the confrontations with Daesh terrorists greatly changed the equation and caused a great tide of Hashad al-Sha'bi volunteers to flood the battlefield. It added, the Iraqi government requested help from the resistance fighters after the fall of the country's northern and western provinces to terrorists and their advances towards the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. Qatar Hezbollah has joined a regional drive in Iraq, Syria, Yemen and Lebanon to target US and Israeli interests in the region. This is linked to the bloody Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip, which started on 7th of October. Qatar Hezbollah has warned of an escalation in the attacks on US occupation forces in Iraq if the Israeli regime continues its brutal aggression on Gaza. Iraqi resistance forces have launched more than 60 attacks on US forces in Iraq and Syria since the start of the Gaza onslaught. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very interesting and very informative hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about the virtues of the Lady Fatima Zahra salamullah alayha. As you know, currently we are in what we call the Ayyam Fatimiyah. These are the days in which the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, as well as those who are fond of that noble household, they mourn the demise and the martyrdom of the Lady Fatima az-Zahra salamullah alayha. The reason for this is that these days they fall in between two very significant days. And regarding those days, it has been transmitted that that noble lady, she passed away and achieved the station of martyrdom on one of those days. Because of this, here at IRIB English Radio and Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on these very sad and solemn days. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a hadith in which Imam Sadiq alayhi salam alludes to the virtues and the greatness of that noble lady. In a beautiful hadith, it's been narrated that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, a certain person came to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and told him that a daughter was born to him and that he had named her Fatima. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam expressed his congratulations and happiness at this, and then he said the following: "Now that you have named your daughter Fatima, it is not fitting for you to curse her or to speak ill of her or to hit her." Now, this is a very beautiful hadith. By way of passing, we can say that this hadith has been narrated in the famous book of Hadith Al-Kafi, volume 6, page 48, for those who want to reference it. Now, this hadith is very instructive in a lot of ways. First of all, it tells us and it shows us that it is recommended and very virtuous for us to name our children after these holy persons, such as the prophets, the imams, and the noble ladies who are related to them. Unfortunately, this is something that has, this is a custom that has, is no longer followed today. A lot of people, choose names for their children, which, even if they're, not completely, Latin. A lot of them, they choose names for them that are, meaningless or, not completely Islamic. And this has a great effect on the child, the upbringing of the child, his nature, his disposition and whatnot. And also this hadith shows us that the virtue of the Lady Fatima, in that she's so respected that even her name is something that should be respected and honored, and we shouldn't hurt a person who shares the name with one of those holy people. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of the Lady Fatima az-Zahra, salamullah alayha, in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala